Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 13th, 2024. It has been 3,698 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 22 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 19 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Tuesday and Wednesday morning. It has been another very busy 24 hours. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is the daily assessment. 1. We maintain that cross-border attacks by Free Russian forces in the Kursk and Belgorod regions of Russia are meant to taint the impending sham presidential elections in Russia and create unrest. 2. The Kremlin has failed in its plan to capture the remainder of the Luhansk and Donetsk oblasts by the start of the Russian sham presidential elections. This is the last day for this entry. 3. We maintain the revisiting of the October 2022 Russian threats to use nuclear weapons, which we had assessed was a very low risk, is part of a Russian hybrid warfare campaign embraced by elements of the United States government to discourage additional military and financial support for Ukraine. This is the last day for this entry. 4. Because Russian nuclear threats continue to dictate Western foreign policy, in our assessment, the world remains in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 5. Our assessment that the United States has ended financial and military aid to Ukraine unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections was inaccurate. 6. We maintain that Ukraine's artillery shortage has been partially resolved, with the first batch of the 170,000 to 195,000 155mm artillery rounds promised by the European Union arriving. This is the last day of this entry. 7. While Russia holds the initiative throughout the theater of war, the ability to sustain intense combat operations in more than three areas of operation has culminated. 8. Despite the improving situation, we maintain that Ukraine continues to use a fab-ban strategy to wear down Russian combat power while conserving resources. 9. The Kremlin is preparing to complete the transformation of the governmental structure into a dictatorship, culminating after the results of the sham presidential elections are released. This is the last day of this entry. 10. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 11. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. We begin today's war report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts, beginning in the Kupiansk area of operation, also known as NAO. Russian and Ukrainian sources reported fighting north and west of Sinkivka, with no change to the situation. East of Kupiansk, Russian forces tried to advance toward Tabaevka, suffered losses and retreated. Near Kharkiv, three Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for a ground attack struck abandoned grain hangars. No casualties were reported. Construction crews are working 24 hours a day to build static defenses in Kharkiv Oblast, including bunkers, trenches, and dragon teeth. More than 500 people and 200 pieces of construction equipment are involved in the effort. In the Kremennaya of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces continued offensive operations east of Terny and Yampolivka with no changes in territorial control. A lone Russian tank tried to advance toward Terny, following the same route as previous attacks, and was destroyed by a first-person view one-way drone. We link to the video in our daily situation report, and there is more information in the podcast description. In the Lysychanskoye, Russian and Ukrainian sources reported there was mutual fighting near Bilohorivka. NASA Fire Information for Resource Management Systems indicated that fighting was northeast and southeast of the settlement, in areas previously assessed as under Russian control. Here is what's happening in the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Bakhmut-Io, semi-reliable Russian sources reported that Russian troops were pushed out of the northern edge of Bogdanivka due to unfavorable terrain and continued pressure by Ukrainian forces. We adjusted the line of conflict but left the gray area unchanged. Fighting continued in Ivanivske, with Russian forces maintaining control of 30% of the settlement. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, GSAFU, reported a Russian attack east of Chasiv Yar was repulsed. In the Klishivka AO, fighting has become positional north and northeast of Klishivka. Russia attacked the settlement of Mirnohrad, striking an apartment building. Two people were killed and four were wounded. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, fighting continued in the Avdiivka AO, where 22 of the 78 Russian-initiated ground attacks occurred. Northwest of Avdiivka, the Russian Ministry of Defense, Armod, repeated its claim that fighting was ongoing near Novobakhmutivka. Further south, two Russian infantry fighting vehicles, also called IFVs, and an armored fighting vehicle, that's an AFV, were destroyed south of occupied Stepove. West of Avdiivka, fighting continued east of Berdychi and Semenivka, in the western and center part of Orlivka, and the eastern edge of Tonenke. Fighting also continued in the eastern part of Pervomayske and near the Ukrainian firebase at Nevelske. Russian reports that Nevelske had been captured are false. Selidove was hit by six Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for a ground attack, striking the residential areas in the north-central part of the settlement. Two women were injured in the attack, which damaged 14 apartment buildings, city administration buildings, and power lines. 19 out of the 78 Russian-initiated ground attacks were in the Vuhledar AO. Fighting continued south and east of Krasnohorivka and east of Georgievka, and Russian sources reported fighting also continued near Pobeda. Ukrainian forces made incremental gains in the center part of Novomikhailivka, regaining control of 10-20% of the settlement. Russia continues to control the eastern third. Armod claimed that Ukrainian forces were on the offensive south of Vuhledar, near Shevchenko. Finally, in the Staromlinivka AO, Russian forces continued their attempts to advance towards Staromayorske without success. In Zaporizhia Oblast, fighting continued in the Orikhiv AO. Russian attacks west of Verbove were unsuccessful. On the northern edge of Novoprokopivka, a Russian armored column attempting to advance toward Robotene was destroyed. Losses included three IFVs, one AFV, and one armored personnel carrier, better known as an APC. Russian forces also attacked Robotene from the west, suffered losses, and retreated to their defensive positions. In an interview with Reuters Thomson, International Atomic Energy Agency IAEA Secretary-General Rafael Grossi said that the staffing situation at the Zaporizhia Nuclear Power Plant, ZNPP, did not pose a direct threat to nuclear safety. Quote, "The situation is not sustainable in the long term. At the same time, in the present configuration and shutdown, the staff that is there can do the job." Unquote. Grossi estimates that 100 Ukrainian workers are blocked from accessing ZNPP, while the Minister of Energy of Ukraine, Herman Galushchenko, called the number a, quote, "Russian lie," adding that it was closer to 380. When pressed by Reuters, Grossi said, quote, "This is a matter of a bit of subjectivity." Last week, the IAEA Board of Governors voted to demand Russia withdraw from the nuclear power plant and return control to Ukraine, which was rejected by Moscow. What? You expected Russia to agree to the demand? In the rest of Ukraine, Russia did what it always does after valid military targets are attacked – target Ukrainian civilians. In Dnipropetrovsk Oblast, a Russian Kh-59 air-to-ground guided missile struck a high-rise apartment building in Kryvyi Rih, destroying apartments and sparking a large fire. During search operations, video captured the moment a man realized his mother had been killed in the attack.
Це моя мама.
Ваша мама?
Так.
Вона йшла додому чи що?
Four people were killed and 43 wounded, including 12 children. At the time of recording, 20 remain hospitalized, including 6 in critical condition. Addressing his nation, President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky said, quote, "Every day, our cities and villages experience similar blows. Every day, Ukraine loses people due to Russian evil. And there can be no pauses for a day, a week, or even months in support when it is necessary to simply protect lives, simply save people from terror. Everyone in the world who is with Ukraine at this time is a real defender of life and justice." Unquote. On March the 11th, in the settlement of Buymer in Sumy, two Russian Iskander-M missiles struck the school and the adjacent residential area because Russian drones spotted a group of civilian cars parked about a block away. Local officials did not comment on if there were any casualties. Overnight, a Shahed 136 one-way drone struck a five-story apartment building in Sumy, causing severe damage. 15 apartments were destroyed and 15 more were damaged. 10 people have been recovered from the rubble, with 8 wounded. The situation along the Russian front remains very dynamic. In the Belgorod and Kursk regions, Free Russian forces continued their attacks. The main Directorate of Intelligence of the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, UHUR, reiterated that Ukraine was not directly involved in the fighting between Free Russian and pro-Putin Russian forces in the Belgorod and Kursk regions. Quote, "The Ukrainian military and special services do not coordinate the actions of Russian volunteers on the territory of the aggressor country of the Russian Federation. At the same time, volunteers use trophy weapons during such raids." Unquote. Quick sidebar. Trophy weapons are equipment that was captured by the Freedom of Russia Legion, the Russian Volunteer Corps, or the Siberian Battalion during earlier fighting. Armored's great victory claims of hundreds dead and 20 vehicles destroyed were so ridiculous that even Russians carefully mocked them on social media. Moscow was also positioning the unrest as attacks by Ukrainian forces, not anti-Putin partisans. In the Kursk region, Free Russian forces claimed they continued to occupy Tyotkina after pro-Putin forces retreated. Moscow denied it, releasing a video claiming that all was well in the settlement. "We were able to geolocate those side Bagadin center, which appears at the 45-second mark in the video." Complicating our assessment, the bulk of the Russian state media video was recorded 600 meters from where a pro-Putin forces APC was destroyed, causing two houses to burn down. Due to the conflicting information, we left the map unchanged. In some breaking news, our reluctance to change the map was well placed. Freedom of Russia Legion fighters Apostol and Domovoy released a video from Tyotkina reporting fighting was continuing. They ended the video declaring glory to Ukraine and freedom for Russia. In the Belgorod region, Free Russian forces likely occupy Kozinka. Russian video showed a T-64 medium-duty tank striking a landmine, throwing a track. Russian propagandists claimed it was due to brilliant preparation that the mine was there. But there's a twist. The tank operated by Free Russian Forces hit the mine on the Ukrainian side of the border. Yes, that's correct. The only evidence showing a tank becoming disabled was due to a mistake. Fighting reportedly continued on the Russian side of the border south of Shebekina. Shelling knocked out power to 45,000 subscribers, and a drone struck the city administration building in Belgorod, shattering dozens of windows, damaging the entrance and wounding four. A drone also struck the offices of the Federal Security Services of Russia, FSB. In the Bryansk region, the regional administration computer systems were knocked out by a cyber attack. Oh wait, there's more. Dozens of Ukrainian one-way drones attacked Russia overnight, with four striking the Rosneft PJSC oil refinery in Ryazan. A geolocated video showed one of the drones flying over the refinery and specifically targeting the AT6 or VT4 distillation unit. A second video showed the other distillation unit being hit. We link to both videos in our situation report. In 2017, both distillation units received a multi-billion dollar overhaul that took over a year to complete. The governor of the Ryazan region, Pavel Malkov, wrote that several people were injured, and the Russian state media agency TASS reported two were being treated at a hospital. The refinery in Ryazan is the third largest in Russia and is capable of processing 17.1 million metric tons of oil per year. At the St. Petersburg International Commodity and Raw Materials Exchange, the price of AI-92 and AI-95 gasoline rose by 1.4% after news of the attack. Moving to assessment. We had previously assessed that the armed forces of Ukraine knew exactly what they were doing by targeting the distillation units of refineries. Today's attack confirmed this, revealing that the drones have been programmed or guided to strike the critical infrastructure. Moscow was already forced to ban all gasoline exports for 6 months on March 1 due to the destruction of distillation units at three other refineries in January and February. And before the attacks, Russia was only exporting 15% of refined gasoline. Yesterday's strike on the Lukoil Norcy refinery will cut production by half when the plant eventually goes back online. The refinery was capable of producing 4.9 million metric tons of gasoline and 5.6 million metric tons of diesel a year. The unanswered question is if Ukraine can maintain the intensity of attacks. Every assault gives Russia another opportunity to counter the drone strikes and better protect its infrastructure. Russia already appears to be taking steps, with state media claiming that air defenses were being bolstered to protect three refineries in the Samara region. If Ukraine can continue a rapid series of deep strikes, the Russian fuel supply will be brought into crisis. Russia's war of aggression has made the state the biggest customer, and the spring planting season has started in some regions, adding more pressure on the supply of diesel and gasoline. With gasoline exports already suspended, the next step to stretch capacity is implementing conservation measures.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Here is my theater-wide update. On March the 11th and the 12th, Russia launched 22 Shahed 136 one-way drones, with 17 shot down. The European Commission officially presented the Council of the European Union with proposals for the draft negotiation framework for Ukraine and Moldova. The draft negotiation frameworks outline the principles for negotiation, the content, and the process. The next steps will be outlined in the summer. The Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, Colonel General Alexander Syrsky, and the Minister of Defense, Rustem Umerov, talked with the United States Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. Topics included preparations for the upcoming Defense of Ukraine Contact Group the situation on the battlefield, and Ukraine's pressing needs. Normally, we don't report mundane meetings like this, but Russians had started a rumor that Sirsky had been killed in an airstrike. Ukraine has started the serial production of several robotic ground platforms. Over 50 designs were field-tested, including one-way strike drones, gun turrets, demining, logistics and supply, and medical evacuation. Arms manufacturer Ukrainian Armored Technology unveiled their 10-seat Novator infantry mobility vehicle. The IMV can be equipped with a remote-controlled 14.5mm machine gun turret. The vehicle is 30% cheaper than imports and has been armored to support border duty. During the assessment section of the podcast, I noted that the world is still stuck in the mutual assured destruction paradox. Mutually assured destruction, or MAD, is a nuclear weapons doctrine that was created in the 1960s. You won't use your nuclear weapons against me, because if you do, I'll use my nuclear arsenal against you, and we'll both be destroyed. And MAD worked perfectly for over 60 years. The US and USSR nuclear weapons programs were successful because they were never used. The mutually assured destruction instability paradox is when a nation decides, I can do whatever I want because I possess nuclear weapons. You won't do anything to stop me even though you have nuclear weapons, because if you do, I'll use my nuclear weapons to destroy you. Does that last part sound familiar? And that's the paradox. MAD prevented regional, continental and global war for over 60 years, but it relied on everyone with nuclear weapons to be rational. Because Russia continues to threaten to use nuclear weapons, and because Ukraine's allies continue to believe that appeasement will prevent escalation, here we are, smack dab in the middle of the mutually assured destruction instability paradox. The good news is that the path to go from don't make me nuke you to all of us building backyard bunkers is long. The bad news is that the paradox can reach a tipping point where the last three steps can happen in days or even hours. What step are we at? Step 2 or 3 out of 10. But that's a topic for David in another podcast. So yes, we're in a paradox, but we were around step 5 in October 2022. We didn't expect this bit of news. The US Department of Defense announced it was sending a $300 million military aid package to Ukraine. The 55th aid shipment includes Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, additional ammunition for HIMARS, 155mm artillery rounds, including DPICM, better known as cluster munitions, 105mm artillery rounds, AT-4 anti-tank guide missile systems, small arms ammunition, and demolition munitions for obstacle clearing. US National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the new aid shipment was made possible due to, quote, unexpected cost savings from contracts that the Department of Defense entered into to replace weapons that had previously been sent to Ukraine, unquote. The White House added that a repeat can't be expected and appealed to Congress to authorize funding for additional military aid. The White House also authorized $126 million in financial assistance to Ukraine using the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961. Denmark announced a $336 million military aid package that includes French-produced Caesar 155mm self-propelled howitzers, 120mm self-propelled mortars, and 155mm ammunition. The Czech Republic clarified that enough funds had been collected through the Ammunition Coalition to purchase 300,000 artillery rounds. But in better news, the purchase of another 200,000 shells has received preliminary approval, which is in addition to the 500,000 already approved and awaiting funding. That's a total of 1 million shells, with 300,000 on their way. Poland announced it would become the 19th country to join the ammunition initiative, and the contribution will be substantial. The French parliament approved the security agreement that has been drafted with Ukraine. Prime Minister Gabriel Attal said that France does not rule out any option for helping Ukraine, adding, quote, "We do not set restrictions against Russia, which does not set any restrictions." The European Union is close to an agreement that will allocate almost $5.5 billion in military assistance to Ukraine. It is reported that a compromise removing the requirement that arms can only be purchased from Europe has been reached. A vote on the package could happen as soon as today. After weeks of threats directed at Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, two congressmen filed competing discharge petitions to force a vote on military aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. In order to move the bill to the floor, one of the discharge petitions must receive 216 signatures in the next 30 days. If either petition gains enough signatures, Speaker Johnson could still delay the vote up to 30 days. There will be four vacancies in the House of Representatives by next week, so a majority is reached with 216 signatures instead of 218. Jim McGovern filed Discharge Petition 9, which would advance the bill passed by the Senate in February to the House floor. At the time of publication, it had received 169 signatures, all from Democrats. Discharge Petition 10 is led by Brian Fitzpatrick and is a bill he created that would provide only direct military aid. It also removes all the humanitarian aid that was in the Senate bill. At the time of publication, it had received 12 signatures, 7 from Republicans and 5 from Democrats. Fitzpatrick's bill has enough Republicans signed on to move forward, even if some far-left Democrats refuse to support the petition. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.